So welcome everyone. I see that people are still arriving, but thank you for attending. I think that I just understood. Someone just said the Zoom link is demanding. It looks like demanding that you log into Cornell, which is how we set it up. We would like everybody to
That's
be in
me.
Cornell Zoom.
Yes.
So we might want to take a minute or two just to let people get
That's
in.
me. You do have to log in to Cornell Zoom before getting in, but this text or the note says, I don't know what commercial login means.
I think. So welcome, everyone. I have a request that everybody be muted so that we don't get a lot of feedback. And so this is our faculty forum today on generative artificial intelligence and how it's used in the classroom. And we're really excited that we were able to get three faculty members to come and share their recent experience. And so let's start with land acknowledgement and then we can move forward with our agenda. Cornell University is located on the traditional homelands of the Gaokono, the Cayuga Nation. The Gaokono are members of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, an alliance of six sovereign nations with a historic and contemporary presence on this land. The Confederacy precedes the establishment of Cornell University, New York State, and the United States of America. We acknowledge the painful history of Gaokono dispossession and honor the ongoing connection of the Gaokono people, past and present, to these lands and waters. And with that, we're going to start. And I just wanted to give you a sense of what the format will be today, because we have an hour and we have a very full agenda, but it will be a very dynamic and interactive one, I hope. And so we wanted to start with one. I want to welcome our facilitators. Thank you both, Steve, Rob, and I believe it was Rachel. Yes. Becky couldn't be here today because she's ill. And then we have the three faculty members, Austin, Tracy, and Lewis. And Tracy was generous enough to come today, not feeling so well herself. And after the three faculty members share their slides and their experiences, then we're going to have all the senators go into different breakout rooms to discuss what they just heard and also share things that they have done. And then we'll come back for the last 15 minutes to share out ideas and really positive experiences that we heard in the breakout rooms. And with that, I'm going to move to Steve, and each person will introduce themselves.
Thanks, Eve. I'm Steve Jackson. I'm in information science and science and technology studies, and I'm now vice provost for academic innovation. I want to welcome you all. Thank you for coming. Thank you in particular to our presenters, who you'll hear more from in a minute. I wanted to set the stage by saying a couple things by way of really the spirit of this event. And to make this point clear, the challenges and opportunities of generative AI in teaching are not technical problems. They're not primarily technical problems. They will not be fully resolved by tools, infrastructure, or policy. And really, our success or not in meeting this challenge and this opportunity is going to depend on our creativity and imagination as teachers and how we can learn from each other. So that's really what this event is about. That's why it's organized in the way it is. And in the same spirit, I also wanted to announce, actually, Eve, can you forward the slides? I also wanted to announce a new program that basically follows on that same principle. So announcing here, but this will be coming around by email as well. We are establishing a new Teaching Innovation Award whose theme this year is on creative responses to generative AI. If this model works, we might do different themes in future years. You'll see that this competition is about drawing out, recognizing, and sharing innovations and experiments from Cornell faculty who are sharing with us their creative classroom engagements and responses with AI challenges and opportunities. This can be about use of generative AI, it can be about teaching responsible classroom AI literacy, and it can also be about effective design practices that steer around generative AI when that is detrimental or undermining learning goals. So it's a 5K award paid into faculty research or discretionary accounts. In exchange for that, we'd like people to present this work back to the Cornell community at a Teaching Innovation Showcase, which is scheduled for April. And we're working on this part of the model, but working with CTI staff to basically write this up as a teaching case with enough detail that other instructors could pick this up and say, I want to try this in my classroom, or I want to pick this up and tweak it in this way. Applications are due January 19th. All Cornell faculty are welcome to apply. Of course, all disciplines, all class type scales, et cetera. And the URL is there below, and that will be coming around by email. And I think it will also be coming around in Eve's Monday message. So with that, why don't I turn things over to Rob?
Thanks, Steve. I'm Rob Vanderlyn. I'm the Executive Director for the Center for Teaching Innovation. I just wanted to share briefly a reminder, really, of the resources that faculty have available to them to help sort of orient to generative AI. And I wanted to start with just a reminder about the University Committee report that was published this past August, and that takes us through some of what generative AI really means, how it has an impact on teaching, and the ways in which faculty can be encouraged to respond. It's a really great report. At the time we released it, we said, you know, this is circa the summer of 2023 because things are happening so quickly. And while that's true, I think it's at least stood up to the 6 months or so since then, 4 months or so since then. It's still really good. And I'll just remind you that there are a series of appendices that are disciplinary based. And so talk about the ways in which faculty can and might respond in various disciplines. And I think it nicely links to some of the presentations you'll hear today. Next slide, please. I also wanted to just remind you about the resources that the Center for Teaching Innovation has put together on our website. We have organized them around sort of major considerations. So talk about the impact on academic integrity, talk about accessibility concerns. Does this make classroom learning experiences more or less accessible and how that works? Questions of equity, of privacy, of ethics, both at the macro level, what is the implication of these corporate owned generative AI models, down to the what does this mean for your classroom and sort of ethical use in your classroom? And then practical concerns. How do you select tools? What do they do? What sort of assignment design questions might they raise? So we have resources on our website for all of those. Next slide, please. So you can find the committee report on our website. You can find resources at teaching.cornell.edu. We also have faculty drop-in hours 5 days a week where you can drop in and ask questions. But we also do individual consultations. And if my colleague Becky Lane was here, she would talk about the fact that she directs a part of the Center for Teaching Innovation, which is new, called the Creative Technology Lab, which supports faculty in exploring different sort of different pedagogies that may or may not be technology related. AI, generative AI, is one of those. And so you can get in touch with us. You can come by our Creative Technologies Lab. You can sit with an instructional designer. They can show you what various AI tools can do, how they might be relevant to your teaching, and really work with you to figure out how you want to respond. At the end, in addition to the examples that we share today, my colleague Rachel will share in the chat a sort of crowdsourced repository of teaching applications from all over the United States. I think it's like 110 slides at this point, which is another way to sort of get a quick look at all of the ways in which people are creatively responding to generative AI. I didn't want to share that now because I didn't want to distract us all.
I'm going to also add that all of the resources, these slides, everything that's shared with you in the chat will also be shared on the Dean of Faculty website and through email.
Great. And that's pretty much all I have. So I'm happy to get out of the way and to hand it over to Lewis.
Thanks, Rob. And thank you so much for having me here today. I am a historian in the ILR School. I teach labor and business history. So I'm going to talk a little bit about my class, data and history. I'm going to talk about, what I imagine, how I'm thinking about AI in the classroom, and then talk a bit about what the students are doing. And this class is both a history of data in the sense, how do historians think about data? How do we critically evaluate data? But then also the data of history. So how do we create data? How do we do data analysis? And so in this way, it weaves together a bunch of different threads. I'm teaching linear regression. I'm teaching the historiography of 19th century New York. So there's a lot of different things that are going on. And I don't think it would be possible to do all these things without leaning heavily on ChatGPT. Next slide, please. So the way I think about this is the way I think about French. So when I was in grad school, I had to ostensibly learn two languages. I'm an Americanist and I'm terrible at foreign languages, much to my regret. And so I use this book, French for Reading. And it's amazing. If you've ever done this, you know you can read wall labels in museums and not speak it or even write it. But this is basically my understanding of what we should be teaching, how we should be teaching Python and coding in the humanities, that we have enough to read, but not enough to write. And in this way, I think about it that coding is not computer science. Computer science is a whole discipline with all kinds of amazing things that it does that are well beyond what I can understand. But coding is very understandable, and it's just a very specific way to talk to a computer. And what I think is pretty novel about ChatGPT and AI in the digital age is that it allows all of us for the very first time to write code, to understand how to use code in our everyday work. Next slide, please. So as we think about this, I want to think about it as AI and domain knowledge, which is often way you think about it, about how AI connects with what we know and our specialized knowledges, but also AI as a low-end tech consultant who can write totally generic code whenever. Next, please. So ChatGPT is really good at writing computer code. I am not, but I have lots of problems that, you know, no one would ever develop a $1 billion system for to solve labor history problems. And yet on the right, I have a list of all the kinds of things that I can do with ChatGPT. And now, of course, that my students can do, which allows us to move faster and further than we ever could before. Next slide. So the class really relies on primers for some kinds of technical knowledges through LinkedIn Learning. Next slide. Students really struggled with the meaning of AI in this, about what is their work. And the clarity of this situation really came to light with the fact that I demanded that they ask questions, that they think critically about data, that they do not just do what I tell them with math. And I feel like in a lot of their math classes, they are just seemingly solving the problem like in the textbook, not saying, well, how can I use math to answer these kinds of human questions? And so I think the value of humans in the age of AI is asking human questions and getting the machines to get answers. And so for a lot of my students, they were deeply uncomfortable with this kind of what I consider to be human work. Next question, please. So they learned all kinds of data science math, but also historical techniques, like turning how to OCR this letter from Sam Gompers. Next slide, please. They learned how to, if you're familiar with computer science, how to use APIs, various APIs to process text. Next slide, please. Which is a pretty sophisticated kind of technique. And so they were able to work with really bad images, like you can see in the top left, to OCR it with code to the thing at the right, and then run it through an AI, which you can see in the bottom left. And the results are pretty nearly perfect. And this is kind of this an amazing moment for what does text mining look like at scale for humanists. Next slide, please. I have 40 seconds. We could also do visualizations like plots and maps, the kinds at a level of quality that used to require a whole semester of GIS. Next slide, please. Creating new kinds of intersections of data that weren't possible without using this kind of code. Next slide, please. The assignments started with very basic things like how to use Google Sheets, and they're ending with very complicated, sophisticated kind of open-ended analysis. Well, they have to, in this example, this is the fourth or fifth, they have to push back on established historiography. Next slide. This is the kind of work they're producing. I might go 30 seconds over, Eve. I'm so sorry. With text, you can see that they are writing traditional historical analysis, really good visualization, and then for every assignment, handing in Python code that they co-generate with ChatGPT. Next slide, please. Rubrics are very standard and incorporate the use of code and the clarity of code into it, as well as traditional metrics of writing and analysis. Next slide, please. At the end of the semester, they're given an open data set from 1950, which they have to ask their questions and then use chat to answer those questions. And again, this makes them very nervous, but is also very real world with very real world dirty data. Next slide, please. They're using punch card data from the 50s that people haven't looked at for 100 years. Next slide, please. And then they are all doing it together. And I'm pretty amazed they are actually able to do this. They're able to go from punch card data to reasoned historical analysis on a range of topics like the veteran experience after World War II and the experience of car ownership. Next slide, please. So this is an example of the kinds of arguments and the kind of code that they are generating, the kinds of questions they're asking. Next slide, please. So I feel like the class had a range of success and failures. I think that I was very successful because they started off not knowing how to code. And by the end, they are arguing with me about all kinds of ways to write their code. They can ask and answer statistical questions and connect those with historical questions. And so we see a nice fusion of humanist questions and social science answers. The challenges were legion. Most of them lack basic computer literacy, like how to organize a folder. They seem surprised. I expected them to remember things from the previous month. The thing that was most astonishing to me was that the complete lack of intuition about mathematics. So, you know, what does a log mean in terms of linearity and exponentiality? And so I think this is something to think about as we are teaching our math classes. And that the group work is always hard, but of course is so important as we are moving into a world where group work is more important. Thank you so much. I'm sorry I went 2 minutes over.
I am very appreciative that you're respecting my request to try to stay to 5 minutes. But thank you very much. And this is fascinating. And next, we're going to have Austin. And Austin, please introduce yourself.
Hello, everybody. I'm Austin Bunn. I'm faculty in performing and media arts. And I'm also the director of the Milstein Program in Tech and Humanity. And thank you, Rob and Steve, for having me on. And Lewis, I just found that presentation totally brilliant. I encourage everybody who just watched it to go back and download it and read it. So what I'm speaking about today is this masterclass that I oversaw or facilitated, really, back when Laurie Anderson was here. And I'm going to show you some of the slides that I used to kick off the masterclass. And I should say, maybe that term isn't so felicitous. I probably would have used workshop looking back. Next slide. So the first thing I did was to just literally show a bunch of members of the audience different versions of portraits that Laurie Anderson, that the software would produce. Next slide. This is from Midjourney. Here's a good example of what you run into using some of these softwares. You can see the prompt below was a bit more literary and atmospheric than the software even understood. And one of the challenges, as you'll see in a moment, it still seems at this moment in time, the visual representations often struggle with hands. I'm not sure, human anatomy just seems to really bedevil these software. So to back up in September, go ahead to the next slide. In September, the Milstein program brought Laurie Anderson here. She is, of course, a Grammy-winning artist from the 80s, 90s, and now. The reason we brought her is because of her multidisciplinarity. So she's both a singer, she's been making visual art for a long time, and she's currently experimenting with using artificial intelligence to collaborate on lyrics for a new project. Next slide. With her being here, I worked with CTI to have one of Laurie's VR exhibits. And in addition, the following day after her talk, we did this workshop of student works that were collaborations with artificial intelligence. Next slide. And just to give you a little space, a sense of where we started, I brought together 12 students independent of a class. So this was on top of their regular schedule. I'd introduced the idea to a bunch of classes, invited students to participate. About 12 students gathered from music, art and PMA to explore what it might mean to make work for Laurie Anderson and to get her feedback. So the place we started was to look at Laurie's own work. She is currently working with an Australian university on generating a kind of ChatGPT that can produce, replicate her own lyrics and Lou Reed's lyrics, her now, her widow, she's her ex-husband, her husband, he's now passed away, unfortunately. And one of the things that was interesting is Laurie's own response to the work it's producing is quite positive. As she says here in this quote, half of it's terrible, a quarter is interesting, and a quarter is kind of great. Next slide. So the students came together. We used this credo from the Laurie interview. If you think technology can solve your problems, you don't understand technology and you don't understand your problems. That was a leaping off point for the students. We generated prompts. And looking back, one of the great things about this presentation was it gave me a chance to reflect back on what really worked. Really, this was an exercise in prompt generation for these young artists. We think about going to the AI with prompts. Well, these students themselves needed something to trigger, something to make work. So we thought about problems, the problem of hands. I show you, there's a slide there from one of these AI generated beer ads. Of course, some of you may know about this Code Da Vinci book of poetry that Werner Herzog intones that just got published. You can see before you a bunch of the other prompts that I was inviting students to experiment with. Next slide. Then I basically got a lot of licenses through the Milstein program for students to experiment. This is probably one of the best aspects of this experience, where students really could log in whenever they wanted on their own time, try it as many times as they wanted, refine it. This is a list of the different software that we used. I should say I really owe a credit to Becky Lane, who works for CTI. She herself has done some interesting experiments with video and AI generated images like the one you're seeing here. And she helped me. She guided me to these various resources, which I just created accounts through the Milstein program. As a small note, these licenses were flagged by IT governance, so I did have to go back and kind of negotiate around how safe it was for students to use them. Next slide. Here are some examples of what the students produced. So they had about 2 weeks to make work. One student, Fabia St. Just, she's in the art program, took images of herself and kind of sort of fabulized herself. She put herself in new locations, next slide, and also upgraded her own image. One of the things she noted is that the AI seemed to refine her body shape as she kept permuting it into these various contexts. Next slide. Returning to this prompter on hands, a student made a video. That's my timer. I'll go over just a little bit. Made a short video about hands and sang along with it using AI-generated lyrics. Smarter people than me understand why AI struggles to represent the human anatomy, but this was a really interesting and quite disturbing short video. And next slide. One of the more interesting pieces was this short video produced by Runway ML that explored this bivalence that we experience with AI, in that it sort of has this holistic angelic quality where maybe it's going to solve problems, and on the other side, something dark and something strange, the uncanny valley. And a student asked the AI to produce something right at the center of that. If you click on the link, we'll get a very quick sense of this video. I think it might be worth it. Just click on the title. Let's see if it loads. Maybe no luck. Well, it's embedded in the PowerPoint. So for those who do want to check it out, you can look at it that way. So we'll go to the next slide. And lastly, just the takeaways. Compared to Lewis's class, which was, of course, a semester's exploration of something, this was a lot more light touch. But I would say that students really benefited from a chance to experiment with this software outside of class. That did mean that it constrained their investment because, of course, they're taking 5-6 other classes. The prompts were quickly abandoned. These were young artists. They tended to find the thing that excited them and ran with it. The premise of course, a workshop is that this elder, more sophisticated artist would give feedback in an articulate way, and the students might use that to refine their work. Laurie was struggled with this assignment. She had a lot of different work coming at her very quickly, and she really tended to focus on more performance issues rather than the AI collaboration, which was a bit of a limitation of the experience. students really did clamor for greater access to the software. So I have given some licenses to students who wanted to continue working and developing their assignments. And I would just say that of all that software that I presented to students, including Murph, which creates voices, or Moobert that creates music, Runway ML tended to be the leader in this. It just seems a lot better. The interface is a lot more better designed for students and the public to work with. And the sophistication of its output is clear. You can see the big image of Laurie with this crazy helmet. That's Runway ML trained on portraits. And the bottom one is from Stable Diffusion, where I asked it to produce a portrait of Laurie Anderson, and it produced this skull-faced figure in a field. So that is the final slide. Thank you for letting me speak.
Thank you so much, Austin. And next is Tracy, if you can introduce yourself.
You're muted, Tracy.
I hit my timer, but not my mute button. Thank you. Thank you so much for letting me be a part of this conversation today. My name is Tracy Carrick, and I am a senior lecturer in the Knight Institute. I direct the writing workshop and the graduate writing service. I'm going to talk today about what students and I have been up to in my first year writing seminar. So these are first year students. And me playing around with generative AI in the classroom space. So I'll talk today, thank you. I'll talk today about two lesson plans, basically. I'll talk you through quickly through a couple of lesson plans that kind of help me highlight some of my current thinking about the instructional value of generative AI. Again, also some thinking on what I see as our collective responsibility to teach AI literacy. So the first activity I want to talk about is using generative AI as an anonymous peer in a peer review workshop in my first year writing seminar. So a standard feature in most FWS is certainly in mine. Every 2 weeks or so, students are drafting some piece of text that they bring in and share with their peers and me. A typical process for us is to discuss sample writing. I usually use modified versions of former students' writing, and we discuss them as a class to kind of calibrate, to establish expectations. We note strengths and weaknesses in the model or sample text, and together we develop a rubric on the board to guide the peer feedback. This semester, I brought AI into the conversation and used ChatGPT. I didn't use any of these other exciting programs that my colleagues have talked about. This is pretty basic with ChatGPT, actually the free version. I'll talk more about that in a minute. After we had workshopped and discussed the sample drafts, I revealed to everyone that ChatGPT had produced them, and I modeled my process for composing the prompt. We revisited strengths and weaknesses in the rubric we had put on the board with the goal of discussing what, if anything, we could conclude about ChatGPT's effectiveness or usefulness for us as emerging writers. We then imagined ways to engineer follow-up prompts to produce more desirable results, because I will note that students did not find the summaries that ChatGPT produced to be terribly effective. After spending, I don't know, 15 or 20 minutes kind of engineering prompts, students commented that prompting was a lot less pleasurable and actually a bit more difficult than just writing the summary in the first place. They then went on, as we always do, to break up into small groups and workshop their drafts. And this was where I was really interested in what I saw happening. After reading and discussing, you can read along with me in red, the AI version, students were highly motivated to reach for writing that sounded more human, these are their words, more like themselves, less generic, and less predictable, and notably more aligned with the writing strategies and techniques that we had been learning and practicing throughout the semester. Next slide, please. It went well, I think. I will definitely do this again. You can see here that integrating generative AI into this lesson plan enabled us to meet, even exceed, course learning goals. And I want to note here that I've underlined integrated. It provided integrated instructional guidance on how to use generative AI ethically and responsibly. Okay, next slide, please. The next activity that we did was to provide guidance for students developing annotated bibliographies on a research project. And actually, I did this activity somewhat recently. As is always the case, students and I set about trying out different research methods at the Cornell Library using Google Scholar and Google with the goal of finding 5 sources that they can use in their research projects. We always do a model sample research question. And in April, in the spring semester, when I decided to try this out, we asked ChatGPT, the free version, to locate 5 sources. And I'll say, as you can see here, it produced some pretty impressive results. We had done searching using more conventional research methods, and ChatGPT actually found many of the same sources we had already identified. Interestingly, when I did this last month, the free version of ChatGPT refused to address the prompt. It said that it couldn't do that. We rephrased the prompt a bunch of times, and eventually we kind of bullied it into producing a list of sources for us. But note the red. They were fake sources, fake titles, fake journals, fake publication journals. But this is also interesting. When we put those fake details into Google Scholar, Cornell Library, and Google, we did find some pretty good sources. It led us to some interesting findings. We also noticed that the AI bot did find authors and researchers who were actually doing work in our targeted areas. So we could find things eventually using some of the results from the ChatGPT. Finally, I had one student who has a paid version of ChatGPT, and he tried the same searches or similar searches to what we had done with the free version, and his AI bot produced an amazing list of legitimate sources. Okay, next slide, please. Okay, so I don't think this worked as well. I'm not sure how I'm going to modify this activity for the future, but I will note that it was less successful because for some students working with the free version, this was a distraction. It was almost a waste of class time in many ways. They were not able to use the free version of ChatGPT to find sources as efficiently as they might have with more traditional research methods. It used up class time that we could have spent doing more work with traditional research strategies. And for me, it focused more on AI literacy than it did on my course learning goals, which focus on research and writing skills. Okay, it did offer some instructional value. It reinforced, though less robustly, typical course learning goals. It was less integrated, but it did provide instructional guidance. And most importantly, and this is a key takeaway for me, is it drew attention to concerns about equity and access, which is in fact a critical theme in my course material. So it did at least follow up in some ways in that regard. Next slide, please. Okay, so what will I do differently? I won't go into the details here. I'll just highlight some of the major areas. I will next semester create an AI generative AI policy with students. I want to hear what their experiences are elsewhere and develop a tentative draft of how we would like as a community to engage with this technology. And then we'll revisit it again at the end of the semester after we've had some time to work together to explore and experiment more. I will also continue developing lesson plans that embed AI literacy into coursework that in ways that support and enhance learning goals. I will assign activities that prompt students to reflect on how their experience with and attitudes towards generative AI change throughout the semester. And this is key for me, given my course, as they develop stronger control of the writing process, adapt to college level writing expectations, and build confidence in their own ability to express ideas and their personal and developing scholarly voices. And then finally, redesign learning outcomes and grading practices. I'm not sure what this is going to look like, and I'm leaning on colleagues to help me think this through so that students who do not have access to, who opt not to use or use generative AI ineffectively, are not disadvantaged. You'll note in the sub bullets here some of the feedback I've gotten from students about generative AI. I'm most interested in the first one. Some students believe that classmates are using generative AI and feel pressure to use it. And final slide, please. Okay, here is a way for me to tell you a little bit more about first year writing seminars and mine in particular. I hope that you will see reflections of how generative AI fits into course learning outcomes that have define my courses and have always defined my courses. I will offer courses that teach strategies that encourage students to use writing to explore ideas, deepen thinking, and develop their scholarly voices. Provide opportunities for students to practice using reading and writing tools in a safe, playful, and supportive learning environment. Promote writing as a collaborative process in which writers seek out a variety of occasions to share their words, perspectives, and ideas with others, artificial and human, and to develop the skills they need to critically evaluate feedback. Prepare students to ask critical questions about the ways they express themselves, make meaning, and participate in scholarly, professional, and civic conversations. And finally, challenge students to reach for words, expressions, and ideas. My final slide is some links to some resources, two posts that I've submitted to the Knight Institute's digital newsletter on how I've been using and thinking about ChatGPT and other generative AI applications. I have also included the statement from the Knight Institute on generative AI in the FWS classroom. And finally, a really terrific article from Inside Higher Ed called Students' Right to Write. That I hope that you will link to. I have the QR code in the top corner if you want to go right to a page that includes these links. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much to all three of you. We've created breakout rooms where the senators can self-select into one of the breakout rooms. And this is a reminder to the facilitators to push record when you get into your breakout room. So Jill, if you could open the breakout rooms, that would be great.
So, Rachel, I'm not sure if those remaining in the main room have any questions for you or.
Right. Sure. I'm just here from CTI to answer any questions about any resources we offer on this in this area or answer any questions or otherwise, feel free to join one of the self-selected breakout rooms.
How do you
Thanks,
join?
I just joined. I was late.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I
so
figure
the right
out
now,
what's going on.
No problem. Okay. No problem.
What are the breakout?
There's kind of like guest speakers on their AI area of interest that they just presented for 5 minutes. And then, but you can join any of them and you can move around. You can try different ones.
Thank you.
Yeah. No problem. All right. See a question. Hey, Don?
Yes. So I have a question. It's not totally related to AI, but I want to know in our classroom, in the conference room, like the Goldwyn Smith, those old, those big conference room, can we use the CD, like the CD for the movie or documentary film show screen in class?
Ah, okay. So this sounds like a question for classroom technology support.
Yes.
Okay. So each school and has their own like person that focuses on your own classrooms.
Okay.
So I can help you identify who that person is and
yeah,
email
I
them.
Know the person.
Oh, so, perfect.
Okay. I know how to, you know, approach him. Okay. Thank you.
Oh, good. Good. Okay.
So Eve chose 15 minutes for the breakout room, so they will automatically close at 15 minutes, and there will be a 60-minute notification countdown, if you will, before they close.
Sounds good. Looks like the breakout rooms work, though. Good job, Jill. People went into them very easily, it seemed.
We'll see how the other rooms do in terms of coming back on time. We can continue our conversation here while we wait for them, if anybody else still wants to share. Yes, Tom.
Yeah, well, I have a different problem. I was hoping to get some insight here because I teach genetics, and one of the courses has historically involved nothing but take-home problems. And the prompts are generated by the questions I ask. And is there any real way to police this? Because it's less about the writing and more about the thinking, but the ChatGPT comes up with some decent answers sometimes. That's what I came to hopefully get some insight on. Maybe I'm too optimistic.
Well, this is something where you could go to the Center for Teaching Innovation and speak specifically about that. They do the one-on-one consultations. So I think that might be a wise choice. And yes, the transition from the breakout rooms back into our space, we can continue the conversation. There's a half, one more group, I believe, that's missing.
I hope nobody's missing.
Oh, okay. Then, because
All
meaning
the
there might
breakout
be people
rooms are
there.
closed.
Oh, they are. Okay. So then maybe others just left for the last few minutes, but I just wanted to thank Austin, Lewis, and Tracy once again. This is really meaningful to us, those of us especially who haven't made the foray into using generative AI. And so just to hear what the experience has been in the classroom thus far might buoy a few of us and make us brave enough to even give it a shot. I can say from our room, the themes of that students are still applying their critical skills, thinking skills. We have concerns about equity. I think the last one was that the more technical you make it, the more the students will have to rely on their own knowledge. I don't know, Steve or Rob, if you have some succinct things that you could share out as well.
Yeah, I can just very quickly, super rich and interesting discussion. There was amazement at Lewis's learning curve, how much he was able to get done in shorter time. Now we found out he cheated. He has a background in CS and math, so not entirely a neutral sample, but much excitement about that and how much the students could do with the tools. Also, some real concerns around instances in which this might be displacing forms of learning, like, for example, coding in the STEM fields that are actually really problematic. Are there going to be ways in which these tools are steering around things we really need students to be? In some ways, the code in STEM, I think of as an analog. Maybe I overheard part of the conversation with you, Thomas, about teaching writing. Writing is a core skill. And is this displacing that? So a mix of reactions and thoughts, but a very rich discussion.
Yeah, I'll just say I was in the group with Austin and a number of you, and we also had a really interesting set of conversations. What this does to skills, but also to like paradigms of knowledge and how we actually think about our roles in knowledge creation, which I think is really interesting. Personally, I was struck by Tracy's example that the students were actually inspired to write more human in some way after they compared themselves to that. I've actually had that experience. The last thing I just wanted to say, and I may be speaking out of turn on this, but I'll say it anyway. I know that our central IT people at Cornell are working hard to get a license for a generative AI tool that we can use that will help address some of those equity issues so that we'll at least be able to provide a common tool that is FERPA protected and safe for use at Cornell. So I don't know with a timetable on that, but I know they're working to get that done.
And that did actually come up in our breakout room. So because higher ed gets a very deep discount, sometimes we're not prioritized. So the timeline is really unknown, but hopefully sooner than later. And I don't know if Rob, if you wanted to just, well, I think Steve, we're gonna share the opportunity that you
the award thing I announced, that'll come around on you'll probably get a couple of different emails about it. And I guess beyond that too, I will say, I've said this in other contexts, part of the function here and part of what we're really after is hearing about the varied experiences people are having with generative AI. And that can be the good, the bad, and the ugly. Like, we really want to hear all aspects of it. So if you have dived into this or plan to dive into this and have experiences to share back, please reach out to Rob or myself, SJJ54 or VPAI, I guess, at Cornell. We really do want to hear that. And we will be taking more opportunities, including coming out of this award competition, to share back additional faculty experiences around this. As I said at the start, I really think this is where we're going to work out our solutions, where we will do things on the infrastructure side, we will do things on the policy side. But as with many other challenges that have confronted us in teaching and opportunities in teaching, the creativity of the Cornell faculty is going to be essential in coming up with better responses and paths forward.
So I know, Suzanne, that we're working with Microsoft, I think, as the first start. That's all I can say. And then, Rob, if you wanted to have any last thoughts.
No, I'll echo that. I really appreciate the creativity and inspiration from Lewis and Austin and Tracy. It's really great to see how this is going. And I really like the way in which these were all sort of developed in dialogue, in iterative dialogue with students over the course of the experience, which I think is really essential. I think we'll learn as much from them as they'll learn from us about how these tools will be effectively integrated into our lives, so in our teaching. So thank you all.
And I appreciate all of you coming. This is the beginning of a conversation on campus. We just wanted to pull this together to start, maybe get people thinking before they start finalizing their syllabi for the spring. And thank you, and have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
A special thank you for Austin, Tracy, and Lewis.